Our next speaker will be Greg Ruiz with Smithsonian Environmental Research Center. He's going to be talking about hull fouling and ballast water. Greg?
Good morning. What I'd like to do today is to provide an overview of vessels as vectors of introduction in coastal marine ecosystems. I'd really like to highlight the magnitude of the challenge to reduce vessel-mediated introductions, but also to provide an optimistic outlook of how far we've come and that we really can do this. Most people know of a high-profile introduction in aquatic systems, perhaps, such as the one Steve talked about earlier, the lionfish. But in fact, in marine ecosystems, most non-native species, most introductions are invertebrates and algae. Over the past 20 years, my colleagues and I have put together NEMESIS, the National Exotic Marine and Estuarine Species Information System, which essentially gleans information that's available to us from a variety of sources shown across the top, to evaluate status and trends of invasions for the nation, as well as several other applications for these data. What we see in coastal marine ecosystems is that the rate of new detections has increased exponentially through time. These are data from NEMESIS that show the number of non-native species that we consider to be established for invertebrates and algae in North America by 30-year interval. This is clearly an underestimate. It's what we know about. Main point is that it's increasing through time. 42% of all the non-native species in these groups that we know of occur in that last 30-year interval in this analysis, which ended in 2010. We see a variety of different vectors or mechanisms of introduction shown in this word cloud. The relative potential importance of these vectors is indicated by this scale. What you see jump out at you is that hull fouling and ballast water are the dominant vectors, both associated with ships. For hull fouling, that of course means the organisms that are on the bottoms of vessels that are transported from one port to the next port. Ballast water, of course, is the water that ships use for stability, trim and stability during transoceanic voyages. They take up ballast in one port, entraining the organisms that are present there, providing an efficient mechanism for release in subsequent ports of call. Another way to look at these data is shown here. Course vector, number of non-native species attributed to that vector. You see that shipping is a dominant signal, the combination of hull fouling and ballast. 200 species, roughly 44% of all the non-native species we know of in coastal marine systems, and again, invertebrates and algae attributed to solely to shipping. The next largest signal is multiple, which means multiple vectors are possible. That colored in red indicates those for which shipping is possible. So on a total, when we look across all of the species that we know about to be established in North America, up to 78% of those species may have been derived by ships. Of course, multiple simply implies that more than one species mechanism is possible. That's illustrated well by the Chinese mitten crab shown here that's established on both coasts of the US, may well have come in the ballast of ships, as I mentioned, or it could be as live trade. This is one of the most commonly eaten crabs in the world. If we take that lower 200 species attributed solely to shipping and break that up more finely into sub-vectors, if you want, associated with ships, this slide indicates the relative contribution of hull fouling and ballast. White indicates those species attributed solely to each of those. Red are those for which each is possible. What you see is both hull fouling and ballast have been important, but there's a fair amount of uncertainty about the relative importance because organisms could arrive either on the hulls of ships or in the ballast of ships based on their life history. So both ballast and hull fouling is important, has been important historically to delivering non-native species to coastal marine systems in North America. However, the relative importance of each of those is not really well understood. It's no surprise that ships are such a dominant signal.
What's that? It's no surprise that ships are a dominant signal because we are a shipping-dependent society for world trade. Most people understand that, but don't have a good sense of the magnitude of the endeavor, the scale of shipping and the associated species transfer with ships. To give you some sense of scale, in the U.S., we receive about 100,000 vessel arrivals per year. These are divided roughly evenly between vessels arriving from overseas and those that arrive from domestic ports. This slide shows a picture of a ship discharging ballast water underway. And I've already told you that we can think of ships as delivering organisms either on the hulls of vessels or in ballast. We tend to think of these as the core habitats that ships are moving around the world. Essentially, ships are providing habitat transfer, and in those habitats are a wide diversity of organisms, of species that have an opportunity to colonize. The magnitude of this habitat flux is indicated here. For simply that portion of vessels that are arriving from overseas, roughly 100 million metric tons or cubic meters of ballast water is discharged to the U.S. each year. And 336 square kilometers of wetted surface area or underwater surface area of vessels is in flux. That's roughly 2 times the size of Washington, D.C. While commercial ships have been a primary source of introduction to North America, initial introduction into North America, and most of the action is in ports, bays, and estuaries, mainly because these are population centers. In fact, most species spread upon colonization. And while this spread may be promoted by commercial ships, it also is promoted to a large extent, we believe, by small vessels, small recreational vessels and fishing vessels. This slide shows the magnitude of vessel traffic or connectivity out of San Francisco Bay, one of the hotspots for invasion in North America, as David mentioned earlier, connecting to other areas, other bays and estuaries that are not commercial ports. So the grand challenge for us really is both to address that primary introduction into North America as well as secondary spread. For ballast water, we've been making very good progress, I believe. We've undertaken, the U.S. and the world has undertaken a stepwise progression of management strategies, interventions if you want, to reduce the propagule supply of organisms in ballast water. This began early on with voluntary guidelines that rapidly progressed to ballast water exchange, which is ships flushing their tanks out in open ocean to reduce the concentration of coastal organisms that are subsequently discharged. That ballast water exchange roughly reduces the concentration of those coastal organisms by about 90%, so an order of magnitude. In recent years, that's been replaced or is in the process of being replaced by discharge standards driven by ballast water technology, treatment technology, such as ozonation, UV, filtration, and a variety of other technologies that are still being developed. Discharge standards are now in place in the United States and are rapidly being advanced as new technologies are being developed. And the International Maritime Organization has ratified a convention that will come into force in 2017. This is the timeline for which we see those events occurring. Over the last 26 years, we've rapidly advanced from voluntary guidelines to increasingly ratcheting down the concentration of organisms being delivered, with the main purpose to reduce the concentration, which thereby reduces the likelihood of new invasions. From my perspective, this has been a very rapid progression. The National Ballast Water Information Clearinghouse is a joint program between U.S. Coast Guard and Smithsonian, where we track all the vessels that come into all the ports of the country to understand ballast water discharge and management. Over the past several years, about 90% of all the ballast discharge from overseas has been treated by ballast water exchange, so about an order of magnitude reduction in the concentration of coastal organisms. This figure shows the location where ballast water exchange occurred. Blue, that exchange happening in open ocean 200 miles offshore as is required. The pink shows those cases where exchange happened nearer to shore because of constraints en route or conditions during voyages that did not allow exchange to happen at sea. What this shows, of course, is that there are some gaps, and particularly for coastwise traffic, that Pan-American traffic, where vessels don't actually go offshore very far enough to conduct an open ocean ballast exchange. Those gaps are going to be addressed by technology that's rapidly progressing. Technology is still very much under development. There's much innovation that's needed. What this shows on the bottom slide is less than 1% of the ballast that's been discharged into the United States in recent years has been treated by ballast water technology. What we should expect to see, however, is a rapid increase over the next 10 years. In fact, I believe we're at an inflection point where new technologies are being tested daily, weekly, being developed and being placed on ships. Only recently, just this last week, has the U.S. Coast Guard type-approved ballast water treatment technology for the United States. So I expect to see a very rapid increase over the next 10 years in treatment technology, and thereby further reducing the concentration of organisms that are delivered in ballast water. What I told you earlier is that a very large area, wetted surface area, is in flux into the United States on hulls. The good news, however, is that much of that is effectively treated. The exposed outer hull of the surface tends to have very low concentration, very low abundance of marine organisms on the outside. That's because there is a penalty for having those organisms. It increases drag, it increases fuel, it increases time. So over many decades, industry has become very effective at using coatings, at cleaning the outer hull surface to reduce the concentration of organisms on that exposed surface. However, there's a gap. There's a gap that needs to be addressed by innovation, by new technology, and that has to do with the niche areas, the interstices around propellers, around rudders, around bow thrusters that are not as easily treated, but also there's no penalty to the drag and the performance of vessels. This slide simply shows some of the types of organisms that you see on vessels and indicates that, in fact, you see a much higher concentration of organisms in those niche areas than on the exposed outer hull. This is a prime target for treatment technology, for cleaning. Many of those are being developed, are being advanced, but there's still a fair ways to go. If we look more broadly at vector management and the current status, what we've seen is a very rapid progression for ballast water treatment, ballast water management over the past 25, 26 years. In some ways, people might think this is a long time. However, if you consider this vector is 130 years old, and we're seeing an acceleration in the rate at which new technologies are being brought on, I find that very encouraging. There's still some distance to go. There's some opportunity for innovation. If we look at hull fouling on commercial ships, it's about 20 years lagged behind ballast water. We're beginning to see engagement, specifically to develop new technologies in cleaning. The regulatory framework is just now beginning to emerge. There are regulations pending in California. There are regulations for the outer Hawaiian Islands. Several countries have been advancing regulations to focus on hull fouling. With recreation and small vessels, those that are responsible, we believe, to a large extent for secondary spread, there are very few regulations in place. However, what we do see is that we know those vessels are moving organisms. What this shows is the percentage of vessels that have different taxonomic groups of organisms. For 50 vessels that were sampled in Alaska coming off the West Coast, from further south, Washington to California. While primary vessels are a primary source of introduction into North America on a continental scale, these smaller vessels tend to be very important and coastwise spread, sort of like bees around a hive, ports being the hive, those small vessels capable of spreading species more broadly. So I want to talk a little bit about innovation. I think that there are several key types of innovations that we need to be tracking, and many of the other speakers have talked about these. One certainly is advancing our understanding about invasion process and consequence. I would suggest that the science is pretty mature in this regard, particularly surrounding hull fouling and ballast water of vessels. We know how this works. We know what the issues are. There are other innovations, though, that are also really important that have to do with the types of interventions, the opportunity to deflect the increase in invasions. Certainly, technology tools, there's a lot that needs to be done yet in advancing new treatment technologies to reduce not only ballast water but hull fouling. But the other sorts of interventions that have been talked about already have to do with social engagement, motivation, and conviction. And these are areas that I think we have a lot of scope for growth, a lot of scope for innovation, for people to really come up with new frameworks, new ideas, new ways to engage the public, as well as the political environment. I think that we have made a lot of progress with respect to advancing treatment for commercial ships. I hope that I've convinced you that ballast water has really advanced very rapidly. We're beginning to see engagement for hull fouling. While I think we've made good progress there, I think there's still quite a ways to go in looking at smaller vessels, those bees around the hive, if you will. However, I think there's a lot of opportunity in that direction, particularly with respect to social engagement and outreach. As you well appreciate, most people who have vessels, who operate those, have a very strong environmental ethic, and I believe that a lot of the opportunity to really make a difference is simply to engage them, to make them aware that those vessels are spreading species and that there are activities that they can undertake that would actually limit the risk and the coastwise spread. So I'd like to stop there. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sure.